Stay with us as we discuss the question, who killed Christ, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Shalom, and welcome to Messianic Perspectives, a daily program where we look into the scriptures from a distinctive first century Jewish point of view. This is Liz Aiello. Today, Dr. Gary Hedrick is discussing a question that has been debated for 2,000 years. Who killed Jesus? Was it the Jews or was it the Gentiles? Who was responsible? I'll be back at the close of the program with news about a special offer. And now, here's Gary.
Thank you, and welcome, listening friend, to another edition of the program. It's good to have you with us today as we finish up this series of studies on the question, who killed Christ? And so far, what we've seen is that the responsibility for Christ's death, according to our text in Acts chapter 2, is shared among three parties. Number one, God himself. Number two, the leaders of Israel. And number three, the Romans or the Gentiles. And when we finished up last time, we were talking about the Jewish role in the crucifixion. We talked about the ancient Mosaic ordination, and we saw that one of the responsibilities of the Sanhedrin was to provide formal recognition of the Messiah when he arrived in Israel. And I showed you last time how Orthodox Jews today are saying that the Sanhedrin needs to be resurrected so there will be a mechanism in place to recognize the Messiah on behalf of the nation when he comes. And so when we understand the Sanhedrin and how it functioned, the Jewish role in the crucifixion begins to come into focus. Now let's turn to Matthew chapter 26 and see what happened. It says in verse 3, "Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people." Remember, we said the composition of the Sanhedrin was, number one, the high priest and his predecessors, number two, the Perushim, or the Pharisees, the rabbis, number three, the Tzidukim, or the Sadducees, also known as the chief priests, and number four, the Torah teachers, or the scribes. They were the elders or the leaders of the people. So it says, "Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas." Verse 4. "And consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety or trickery and kill him." Verse 5. "But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people." Then it tells how Judas made arrangements to betray the Lord for 30 pieces of silver. And they went and apprehended Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and took him to Caiaphas. Now, look at verse 57. It says, "And they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled." Verse 58. "But Peter followed him afar off unto the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end," that is to see how it would turn out. "And then they brought in some false witnesses, but they couldn't find any two of them whose testimony agreed. And the Mosaic law said you had to have at least two or three witnesses who told the same story before you could sentence someone to death. So since they weren't getting anywhere, the high priest finally decided to cut through all the baloney and get right to the main question." Verse 63 says, "Caiaphas stood up and he said to Jesus, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God." He was demanding that Jesus present his messianic credentials before the assembled Sanhedrin. And in issuing this ultimatum, Caiaphas the high priest invoked one of Messiah's traditional Hebrew titles, HaMashiach ben Hamavorak, literally, the Messiah, Son of the Blessed One. Here's what Caiaphas was saying to Jesus. He was saying, "Here we are. We are the Sanhedrin. It's our job to receive the Messiah when he comes. Now you tell us, are you the Messiah?" And notice up until now, Jesus had refused to speak in his own defense. Even when they brought those false witnesses who were telling lies, he refused to correct them. He didn't speak up. He refused to defend himself. But now Caiaphas has placed the question in the form of a Hebrew oath. So Jesus is honor-bound to respond to the question. There was no Fifth Amendment in ancient Israel. When the man who sits in the seat of Moses asks Jesus a question, point blank, he has to answer. And he does. But in order to determine Jesus' full response to the high priest's question, we have to consider all three synoptic gospels, Matthew 26:64, Mark 14:62, and Luke 22:70. When we put them all together, we find that Jesus' full response was, quote, "Just as you have said, I am." Then, as if to allow no room for error, he referred to himself as the one who would fulfill Daniel's prophecy of the Ancient of Days, found in Daniel chapter 7, verses 9 through 14. He looked Caiaphas in the eye, and he said, "Nevertheless I say unto you, Caiaphas, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Matthew 26:64. And you talk about a reaction. Caiaphas lost it. It says Caiaphas ripped his clothing, a gesture that was expressly prohibited in all but the most grave cases of blasphemy. You see, Caiaphas recognized that Jesus was not only claiming to be HaMashiach, or the Messiah, but that he was identifying himself as Adonai in the flesh. He said, "I am." In the Greek, it's ego eimi, which is the same expression as the Hebrew eya asher eya, or I am that I am. It comes from Exodus 3:14, when Moses asked the Lord what his name was, and the Lord said that his name was I am that I am. Jesus said, "I am." Now, at that point, the leaders of Israel had a decision to make. They had to decide whether or not they would receive Yeshua ben Yosef, the carpenter's son from Nazareth, as the Messiah of Israel. Verse 65, "Then the high priest rent his clothes, he tore his clothes, saying, He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy." Verse 66, "What think ye?" They answered and said, "He is guilty of death." Verse 67, "Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, thou Messiah, who is he that smote thee?" That reminds me of Itzhak Shea, the Hasidic Jewish man who came to faith in the Messiah back in 1988 or so. Just a few months before he died of leukemia, Itzhak told me about going witnessing in the Jewish area of downtown L.A. with our mutual friend Amnon Shore. And Itzhak said they were passing out Hebrew tracts and New Testaments when a little Jewish woman came up to him and spit in his face. Then she began cursing him and hitting him with her purse. Well, she was too small to do any real damage, but Itzhak said it was humiliating. He said, "Gary, it was the first time in my life anyone had ever spit right in my face." And I told him, I said, "Itzhak, maybe that's what Peter meant when he talked about our sharing in the sufferings of the Messiah, being partakers in the sufferings of Christ. If they spat on Jesus, they will spit on us. If they hated him, they will hate us." So they spat on Jesus and mocked him. Then it says in Matthew 27, verse 1, "When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death." Verse 2, "And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. They turned him over to the Roman authorities with the recommendation that he be put to death. That's the Jewish role in Messiah's death. But we're not finished. Our text in Acts 2:23 implicates the Romans as well, when it refers to Jesus as the one whom ye have taken, the Jews had taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain. Notice, the Jews were the ones who took him or apprehended him in the Garden of Gethsemane, but the wicked hands that performed the execution were those of the Romans. It was Roman soldiers who nailed our Lord to a Roman cross, and it was a Roman spear that pierced his side. It was Roman stakes that pierced his hands and his feet. Roman soldiers cast lots for his garments, and it was a Roman centurion who watched him while he died. So the Romans, or the Gentiles, had their part in the crucifixion too. The Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, could have stopped the execution. Pilate had the authority to reverse the decision of the Sanhedrin. His own wife had warned him not to have any part in the condemnation of this just man, Jesus of Nazareth. But he did it anyway. So in the end, it was not a Jew who decided that Jesus should die, but it was a Gentile, a Roman governor. So what should we do? Weigh the two sides, the Jews against the Gentiles, to see who is more guilty? Nonsense. We're all guilty, because he died for all of us, Jew and Gentile alike. Besides, the Gentiles should be the last ones to accuse the Jews of killing the Messiah, because the New Testament teaches that it was through the Jewish rejection of the Messiah that God's grace was made available to the Gentiles. My dear Gentile friend, listen to me. It is through the Jewish rejection of the Messiah that you and I have been grafted into the good olive tree of God's family. So the Jews were not Christ killers who somehow messed up God's plan. If the Jews had accepted Jesus as their Messiah, at least theoretically, it would have been a disaster for the Gentiles. But because the Jews stumbled over the stone of stumbling, because they stumbled over that rock of offense, because they rejected Jesus, God's grace has been extended to the Gentiles. In a sense, the question of who bears the guilt for Christ's death is moot, because Jesus himself forgave those who were responsible. As he hung on the cross, he said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." And if our Lord forgave those who were responsible for his death, how can we do any less? Well, that brings us to the end of our study on who killed Christ. I hope you found it helpful. Until next time, this is Gary Hedrick saying, God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you, listening friends, for joining us today. It's always good to have you with us here on Messianic Perspectives. If you'd like your own copy of Gary's series or would like a copy for a friend, you'll be glad to know that it's available on CD for the suggested gift of just $6. The title is Who Killed Christ? Just visit our secure online store at messianicspecialties.com to place your order. If you would prefer to order by mail, just address your request to Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. To order by phone, use our toll-free order line from the U.S. The number is 1-800-926-5397. And as always, when you're in touch with us, please mention the call letters of this station. If you're listening to our webcast or podcast, we need to know that too. I'm Liz Aiello. Join us next time, won't you, as Dr. Gary Hedrick begins his series on What is the Sin Unto Death? Right here on Messianic Perspectives. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries of San Antonio, Texas, and is made possible on this station by the free will contributions of our listeners in this area.